This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. New York City, in recovery from the pandemic and from the dislocations of these last years, now is it a slowdown? I welcome Harry Siegel, a senior editor at The City, as well as a columnist at the New York Daily News, to measure his honor, the mayor, Eric Adams, and his progress from the campaign to the facts of City Hall in recovery. Harry, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Crime, crime, crime. It's on the agenda across the nation, not just in New York City. A concern because of the disorder following the pandemic and the on-again, off-again understanding of what is to be done with people who are perpetrating crimes, crimes of theft, crimes of randomness in the street. And then there's the challenge, especially in California, but also in New York, of people without homes, people who have come to New York City because, Harry, how is the mayor reporting the crime and the order in the streets these days? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So the mayor just did a victory lap showing that the number of shootings was down dramatically in August, as were the number of murders, down by more than half this August compared to last. The numbers are now below the pre-pandemic numbers in both those categories for this last month. And they're down pretty significantly to date this year from last year. So that's murders and shootings, which he's really focused on. And that's very good news. But one of the things that's noticeable is that those numbers have gone down. But at the same time, that every other category of crime is up significantly. So the major crime rate is up about 35%. Robberies are way up, felony and misdemeanor assaults, serious crimes. So Adams promised to create a city that was safe and fair. And what he's done with shootings to this point and with the NYPD is and murders is really impressive. What's interesting is this doesn't seem to be translating into a broken windows sort of approach, for better or worse, where it's having an effect on these other crimes or a broader sense of urban disorder, serious urban disorder that makes people nervous about getting on the trains or walking around late at night or things like that. And with reason, as those numbers are way up and up from elevated numbers last year. And it's possible we have this interesting split where guns are under more control. There's less trigger men. It's mostly men, of course, out there. But disorder is a serious problem. One side to the contrary is that after almost 10 years of continuous decline, the number of misdemeanor arrests in the first half of this year was up by something like 25%. So there is effort being expended on that end as well. But it's not clear that those efforts are sufficient to address the problem of at least stabilizing the numbers, let alone trying to get them back down on all of these other smaller but really significant crimes.
Harry, I'm told and I read that the city has not returned to full strength, especially in the office towers. Is that a factor that the mayor mentions or that the NYPD mentions? We don't have full...
So the mayor has pushed rhetorically very hard to get people back to work. He's pressed big business owners and leaders like Jamie Dimon directly to get their employees back to work. He says, look, the city doesn't function without that. And my restaurant workers and my service class people, they're not going to have jobs if this doesn't happen. This gets very chicken and eggy because many of these people have not returned to work, are not planning to, are not going to need as much space going forward. And there is a obvious and visible increase in disorder, as well as the sorts of crimes I mentioned in the business districts and on the subway that make it hard for people to return. That's a different set of priorities and a different set of problems. You're talking sometimes about mentally disturbed people. You're talking about just aggressive and disruptive young people at points, people who don't necessarily need to be arrested or incarcerated or criminalized, but certainly need some sort of help or assistance. And if the answer is just leaving them to circulate around the city, it's going to make it that much more challenging to get people back to the office. And of course, If circumstances were perfect after several years of working from home, there are a whole lot of people who are just not interested in returning to offices, who have quietly or not so quietly quit. And we're not simply going to snap back to how that worked in 2019. And that presents huge challenges for New York, where real estate is a big and essential industry. And we have Kathy Hochul has this gigantic plan for 10 new towers right by Penn Station that she calls a Penn Station redevelopment plan, but it's really just an office development plan. You know, who's going to occupy all of that very pricey square footage? It's really not clear. The Hudson Yards, of course, both on the residential and the commercial side, and the offices are full of vacancies. And if that doesn't happen, this changes significantly the money that's available for policing, for social help, for doing anything about these other problems. And the concern is that potentially, that Adams is trying to avert through action and rhetoric, that the city ends up entering a decline spiral where less people have reason to be there over time. It remains very expensive. Tax revenues drop. Services aren't as good. And then even fewer people, have reason to be there as that happens. And this repeats.
The difference between a campaign, Eric Adams, and a mayor, Eric Adams, is whether you're able to follow through on your general theme to the people who elect you. We recently had a speech by the President of the United States in Philadelphia that was disappointing in that it was not part of the campaign of 2020 and his early days as president.
John, as you know, I wrote a column about this. And Thucydides and what happens when all civil rhetoric breaks down. Clearly, Joe Biden was not the first push in the breakdown of civil rhetoric. But this speech was really depressing to me. It was a president who came to office and said he was going to reunite the country and restore norms, you know, with this dark red backdrop. And the commander in chief with Marines behind him giving a nakedly political speech, saying what a danger the supporters of his political opponent are, and doing this right ahead of the midterms. This happens as Trump is giving podcast interviews saying he's going to pardon all the January 6th guys if he gets back to power. And he's doing lots of norm smashing of his own. But it is depressing to have somebody who's elected on a promise to try to restore those norms and reunite things feel entitled at a moment of political opportunity with the midterms approaching while trying to maintain control of Congress to feel this free to use the same sort of rhetoric, let alone in what was nominally a non-political speech and a unity speech. So this really concerned me about how entitled everyone seems to feel at the moment in our political arena about declaring and assuming the absolute worst about their enemies, and the ways in which that cuts off any possibility of compromise, reconciliation, or ordinary boring political progress when everything is framed as apocalyptic. And that really is what Biden was doing in this speech.
It occurs to me, Harry, as you explicate your excellent column, very rarely do you get to read about Thucydides in the 21st century. In your excellent column, that the disorder we've noted in New York is turning into disorder in rhetoric, in political rhetoric.
So Thucydides, I can't give the context here, there's not time, but some of these quotes from 2,500 years ago seem so relevant today about how words had to change their ordinary meaning and to take that which was given to them. And reckless audacity came to be considered the courage of a loyal ally. Prudent hesitation came to be seen as specious cowardice, and moderation was held to be a cloak for unmanliness, ability to see all sides of a question, inaptness to act on any. And then this really jumped out at me. To forestall an intending criminal or to suggest the idea of a crime where it was wanting was equally commended until even blood became a weaker tie than party. Because, he goes on, the people who were united in the willingness to do anything to win, who were effectively against all the established institutions, simply became more and more powerful. And the people within the established institutions then repeated those same sins to try to maintain their power. And this, on a national level, I hope I'm wrong, becomes a cycle of decline where 40% or so of the country just sees another 40% or so as utterly illegitimate, not responsible enough to hold power, even if elected by a popular majority. And all rules and norms are tossed. And I really am worried we're getting there. I do wish that the people who loathe Trump, which I do, by the way, for a whole number of reasons, I think he's not a good or honest or reliable person. I think he's a criminal. Understand the breaking seals to do that, leaking parts of investigations, just sort of endlessly extending this narrative because, hey, it's Trump. Just empowers people who are sympathetic to his critique of progressive elites as they see them to do the same things. And that all sides see the other as the threat to democracy. And unless there's some common acceptance of the arena, the stakes and what's happening, like nothing good can emerge from that.
Harry Siegel of The City and New York Daily News. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.